Stranger Than Christian is sponsored by The Wash Vintage, clothing and accessories at unbelievable prices, rare, unique, and fashionable merchandise with new stock added each and every week. Visit thewashvintage.com, use the promo code STRANGER, and receive 10% off your first order. That's promo code STRANGER for 10% off your first order at thewashvintage.com. The Wash, vintage for the masses. Hey, special shout out to Marina, my first European patron. Thank you so much. Today, I'm talking to Randy from Virginia Beach. This is Stranger Than Christian. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to another episode of Stranger Than Christian. My name is Christian Carrion. You know, I get a lot of comments on the show, all of them positive. Thank you so much for all of the feedback that you've been giving me, whether it's through reviews, through emails, through text. Thank you so much. And so I will read an email that I got from somebody who listens. His name is Scott, and he says, I really enjoy the show. It's a very meditative experience to listen to you talk to the people that you talk to. My one question is, how is your brother doing? Well, thank you for your email, Scott, and I think what I'm going to do is give Andrew a call, and we'll find out how my brother is doing. So let's see what we got here.
Hey, gorgeous.
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm doing all right, how are you?
Oh, good. All right, cool. Thanks. Bye. So there you are. My brother is doing just fine. And there you go, Scott. Thank you so much for your email. And if you have any questions about my family, my show, or anything regarding Stranger Than Christian, please feel free to email me at christian@radiofreebrooklyn.org. Today, I'm talking to Randy. Randy is a former celebrity chauffeur, and he lives right now in Virginia Beach. He is very active in the world of nonprofits. He created a nonprofit organization to help high school students interested in the creative arts, especially as that relates to music. His organization helps aspiring musicians create albums, and his nonprofit uses all the resources available in various public schools to help this achievement become reality. And it teaches self-confidence, and it teaches some business acuity, and we talked about that, plus many, many, many other things, as I'm sure you know. We are on Facebook at Stranger Than Christian, Twitter at Stranger Than C, Patreon.com/Stranger Than Christian. Starting to push out some exclusive content for people who sign up on Patreon. So if that interests you at all, I would greatly appreciate your support on Patreon. Thank you very much. I will have that conversation with Randy from Virginia Beach, Virginia, in just a minute. But first, here is a word of interest about a phenomenal program on the Apocalypse Podcast Network. You are listening to Stranger Than Christian on Radio Free Brooklyn. Stay right there.
Could it be the giant pink dress?
You didn't like a Jimbo outfit? How dare you?
I know.
Hi, I'm Mijan.
And I'm Nick.
I like to call myself a semi-drag race expert.
And I've never seen it before.
So join us on our podcast, Whispering Hunties, every week for drag race expertise.
And the exact opposite of that.
Either way, it's a kiki.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, grrr.
Okay.
Get
How
out.
Could I possibly?
Take your cute cats that keep walking all over you and making
know.
Me wish that I had a
My
pet.
Sweet little debris.
Get out of this podcast. I need a door slam like right now as I throw you out of the house.
Christian, you there?
Hey, Randy.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, good. How's it going?
Man, if I was any better, I'd blow up.
Oh, man, don't do that. Do you do many podcasts?
I have. Well, I used to be a co-host of a podcast a couple of years ago, but I get interviewed every once in a while. We had, you would probably know better than anybody else, but if you have a podcast, you tend to be magnetically drawn to other people that have podcasts in your area. And I know for me that, you know, we used to help each other out and we'd advertise on each other's podcasts and whatever. So, you know, because of that, I've been on quite a few other podcasts talking pretty much about the same stuff. So this isn't new. It's just the first one I've done in like maybe 3 or 4 years. So,
well, I agree 100%. Once you start doing a podcast, it's like being part of the X-Men, this whole underground network of mutants comes out, and now you're part of this.
Yeah, but it's okay, man. I dig it. I used to get really nervous, and but I like the way that you do it because you're just a guy having a conversation, you know. And I really dig that. Nobody's really trying to nail you. I don't have to be worried because you know. But you're gonna try and corner me into some subject or anything. You're just a normal guy having a conversation, you know.
Well, on that subject, I was sent this manila envelope of photos. Would you care to explain any of these?
Hang on, is my lawyer still out there?
Right. Well, actually, I just invited him to the room, so give him a second. Oh, he's setting his microphone up too, actually.
Steven, are you there? Right.
No, that was the goal when I started doing this show. You know, I missed talking to people, and I was working at a hotel, and I said, you know, I wish I could have more of an in-depth sort of connection to these people that I'm meeting, because I was meeting people from all over the world. And I said, I wonder if I just, you know, I wanted to start a podcast, and I listened to a lot of them, and I said, you know, I don't really like the whole scripted, self-aware sort of thing. What if I just turn my microphone on and the first word somebody says is hello, and that just kicks it all off. And that's and now I'm, you know, almost 50 episodes in, and here we are.
Man, that's hot. That's hot. That really is.
Now I'm talking to Randy. You believe it?
Yeah, who'd have thunk it?
You know? Wow.
You have really hit the stars, brother. Let me tell you.
Well, listen, I'm dealing with this new phenomenon of talking to people who listen to the show, which is, this is the first time that that's happened. So it's very surreal, but it's fun. It's fun to hear people say, oh, you know, I listen to the show. Like that's incredible. Cause you make a thing and you put it out and it's like, I don't know who's listening to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember whenever we had our podcast that we used to get people from, I remember you a couple episodes ago, you were talking to a really nice lady from Australia. And whenever I listened to that episode, I remember whenever we first got our first feedback from somebody in Australia and my partner, John, I was like, John, you're not going to believe this. I know we got people in Southern Indiana and Virginia and whatever, you know, that's listening to it. We actually have somebody from Australia. Both of us, man, we got goose pimples and like,
yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, but after a while we had communication from, you know, people in Great Britain. And I mean, it was just unbelievable. We weren't that big. Yours is quite a bit bigger than ours.
Well, you know, that feeling will never get old. That idea that somebody halfway around the world is listening to what you're doing. You know, yeah. I compare that in terms of feelings that never get old, that and being in the local newspaper, no matter what you're in the newspaper for, whether it's for like a little blurb, you got stopped on the street and asked about something, or you know, you're part of some event, you got your picture in the paper, no matter to what degree you're in the paper, it's always exciting. And it's right. Always worth everybody going out and buying a copy, you know, once your picture or once your
sure.
Words are in there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I could be wrong. I'm suffering from old guy's memory, but I think I've only ever been in the paper one time, and it's quite a few years ago. And I live in Virginia Beach, and we have the company I used to work for at the time. We had limos that went up to the Washington Redskins football game in FedEx Field, and they had somebody from the Washington Post out there, and they were doing a special on chauffeurs because a lot of people wouldn't think that people take limousines and, you know, small buses and things like that to the games. And all of us tend to hang around each other. And, you know, you hang around the people you most associate with. And they had my picture that was in there. And ever since then, I've just, wow. And there was a short time in my life that I thought it would be really cool to shave my head. And nobody else liked it except for me. But wouldn't you know, the one time I go in the Washington Post, there's Randy with a bald head, you know.
Of course, they were waiting for it.
Yeah, my girlfriend now, she just looks at me, shakes her head like, why did you think that was okay? Did you think that was cool? And it's not.
Now, my wife shaved my head for the first time a couple years ago because she noticed I was balding in the back and she didn't want me to be shocked by that. So she figured if she keeps it an even playing field and just shaves my head, I won't notice it.
Now, how did it feel whenever you got it done?
Oh, I love it. And I'll be honest with you, even if I wasn't balding, which, by the way, I have no problem with. I am eventually going to look like my dad, and my dad was handsome. I have no problem with that.
Right on.
But I don't mind a shaved head. It takes a certain, and I'm going to toot my own horn for a minute, it takes a certain head shape to pull off the
bald
head.
That is exactly right, yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't be too lumpy. You can't be too round. It's just, it just has to be just right, you know? Right. It's like finding a good watermelon.
And you gotta thump it too,
right? Yeah, that little hollow sound in there.
I used to shave mine down to the bone. I liked it shiny, you know. And there'd be some people that'd be like, "Oh God, can I touch your head?" The bad thing about it is, I have dark hair, and so you could see that I'm this big fat guy that shaves his head, and you know that. To people that see you and don't interact with you, they automatically associate you with certain people that have skinheads. And because of that, I tend to let it grow out after that because I didn't want to be associated with those groups. You see a big fat white guy with a shaved head, what are you going to think? Okay, well.
That wouldn't be the first person I asked for directions, I got to tell you.
That's pretty much the attitude I had.
You know, so maybe I'll just GPS it. That's okay.
Yeah, but it's okay. You know, it's funny. I'm adopted, and whenever I actually found my family when I was 30, and I was thinking, you know, I don't know if you know anybody that's adopted, but you have this. I always called it like an adopted kid's fantasy in your head, you know, like your dad is Elvis Presley and, you know, your mom is like whoever, you know, that's famous, you know, oh, I'm going to find him and I'm going to find out I'm famous, you know. And then I found my family and I was like, well, no, I'm not. But I always hoped that my father was going to be bald. That means when I get older, then I'm going to be bald. Then I found my father and he's just short little widget of a man and he's got a full head of hair and he's a hairy bastard. He's got hair on his arms and his chest, which I absolutely do not. And I'm thinking, boy, did I get the short end of that straw. Jeez.
You know? He took it all, right?
Full beard. Yeah.
That's amazing. You know, on some websites, you see a thing called the word cloud that'll show you the words that are used most often and sort of depending on how large they are in that cloud, that tells you how frequently they were used. If I were to have a word cloud for 2020, adoption would be one of the larger words there because my brother had a baby back in August. And so the question has come around to me now, when are you going to have kids? When are you going to have a son? When are you going to bring us home a kid? And my wife and I are sort of on the same page in that we don't know that that's really part of the plan, but the idea of adoption really resonates with us because we have this idea that instead of putting another child into the world, into whatever world we have right now, maybe we have the resources to help one that's already in the world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just been something that we've talked about so frequently lately. That's amazing that you bring that up.
That takes a really special, I don't know if I would call it a talent or a characteristic, I guess a characteristic that you could stand back and look at the whole picture like that. And you can see that there really are a whole bunch of kids out there that are already here, already waiting, you know, and they have bad situations and came from horrible families, or maybe they're even just a baby. I was adopted at 6 weeks old. So not a lot of memory of anything else, but yeah, that takes a special characteristic to be able to make that kind of observation. I respect that. I respect that a lot. You don't hear a lot of people saying that.
Yeah, I'll be honest. My wife is really the one who taught me and continues to teach me how to look at the big picture when it comes to various things in life. You know, things as small as, you know, leaving some for the next person, you know,
sure,
and things, you know, like that. Guys.
We're guys, you know. And
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tend to be smarter, you know.
Oh, God, always. My wife is the smartest person I know. She's mad at me right now for making her turn the TV down while I was recording, but she is the absolute smartest person I know.
I have to say I'm the same thing. I'm sure your wife is smart, but my girlfriend is the smartest person I know. And I always say, if you want anything done, go to Jennifer. But if you need anything eaten or picked up, I'm your guy.
There you go. It's good to have a talent in this world, isn't it? So if you don't mind, I want to hear more about you being adopted. Did you, And I may have some misconceptions here because I don't know anybody who was adopted, and I wasn't. So okay. I may have questions that don't jive with your reality.
That you know of.
Well, that's very true. No. If you look at my mom and my dad and you look at me, there is no question.
Walking DNA test stuff.
I'm like, if you took half of his face and half of her face and mashed them together, that's me. That's I look like both of them equally, you know. Was your being adopted something that you were aware of from an early age, or was there a point when your adoptive parents sat you down and said, hey, listen, we have to tell you something?
You know, I'm 53 now, and I can't remember a time in my life whenever I didn't know it. So I would imagine by the time that I had some kind of wherewithal about me, you know, I'm guessing maybe 7 years old, something like that on, I always knew. It never was a secret. And I never was close with my mom's side of the family, but my dad's side of the family, which are all hillbillies from Kentucky. I was very close with them, and all of them knew, they were in on the secret too. So even whenever I went to, in fact, I'll tell you the truth, I have a cousin that he absolutely refuses to talk about me being adopted. You know, your blood, your family to me, and now I'm not going to hear anything else. So, you know, which makes you feel good, you know.
Sure. Well, that strikes me as a healthier way to go about that. Something about, you know, when a person turns 13, they get this talk and they find out that their parents aren't really their parents. And all of a sudden at this like formative age, they're dropped into this whole confusing sort of spiral of like, you know, who am I? Who are these people?
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
It's kind of like whenever you're like 15 or 16, you know, your dad sets you down and, you know, you're sitting on the bed and he's sitting next to you and he goes, you're a boy. Well, you know, that's kind of a big deal. You want to know before.
Right, right, right. Exactly. Well, yeah. And that strikes me as much healthier to do it that way and have it be, you know, a matter of public record in your family. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and not something that is kept away from you.
Yeah, to me, it was a lot healthier. Yeah.
Now, growing up, how did you feel about the possibility of meeting your adoptive parents? Did you want to meet them? Were you angry at them? Were you excited to find out who they were once you got old enough to go find them?
You know, it was never really, well, it affected my life a lot, mainly for the good, but I never was mad at them. And for some reason, I just always kind of knew the setup. I always knew the framework or why I was adopted. And don't tell me why, don't ask me why, because I really don't know. But I always just kind of figured that I was a oops, you know. And it's funny because whenever I was, I'd say mid-20s, I started kind of seriously, maybe half-heartedly looking for my biological family. Now, you got to remember, back then, we didn't have the computers. We didn't have cell phones. You know, you had to do everything by going to a library, making a long-distance phone call. I was born in San Diego, so Virginia Beach to San Diego or wherever I was living to San Diego. And, you know, you don't know where to call, who to talk to, what kind of mood they're in. And plus, I was born during the Korean-Vietnam War, so you know, a lot of those records were sealed. You know, my records right now are still sealed. I can go to my parents. I can call them up right now. Doesn't matter. I can't look at my own records. So I went to work kind of pro bono for I was living in Louisville, Kentucky at the time, as a matter of fact. And I went to work for a private investigator. And I said, you know, I'll help you out for free if you can teach me what to do. I don't want you to do it for me. I just want you to teach me what to do. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. And I probably did that for about 2 years. And I kind of not really fell in love, but kind of fell in like with private investigations. And that kind of led to like the rest of my life and security, you know. One thing led to this and this led to that, and you know, but the way that I finally discovered my parents was really kind of like a weird fluke. I'd spent, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours and hundreds and probably thousands of dollars through the years trying to find them. And then I was reading a book one time, and they said that back in the day, from this year to this year in Southern California, if you were put up for adoption, if it was a public adoption, then you can sign a waiver. And if your mother or your father or both of them had signed the same waiver whenever you were born, that they'll put you two together. So I was like, oh, well, you know, it's worth a shot, you know. So I mailed off to San Diego County Adoption Agency, and I had, you know, they mailed it to me. I filled it out, and I sent it back. And by this time, I was living in Everett, Washington, just north of Seattle. And I got a big packet in the mail, and it was a manila envelope. And I opened it up, and it was a birthday card for every year that I was that I've been alive, that I've been around, and picture of my mom and whatever her family unit is at that time. And, you know, she writes me notes and all that. So she has sent a birthday card to me, to the adoption agency, every year, all the way up until I was like 18 or something like that.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I wouldn't even expect that. Yeah.
No. Wow. That's so incredible. Well, that has to make you feel, that has to make you feel great.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, at this time, I'm going to assume that you're substantially younger than me. But at this time, the big fad, with the lack of a better term, the big trending thing on talk shows was Oprah reuniting families. And I believe the first episode that she did like this was something like maybe like 6 months after me and my family got together. And we had all kinds of friends. It's kind of a private thing to me at the time. Not necessarily like I'm trying to hide it, but it's just something you don't really talk about, you know, like it's, you know, and it's not like I'm not proud of it or anything, but it's just a characteristic of my life that it doesn't normally come to mind. You know, it's not like you being right-handed or you got brown hair or whatever, you know, so you just don't think about being adopted, you know?
Right. It just kind of comes naturally. But again, I'm sure that has a lot to do with the way that that was presented to you when you were younger. It wasn't
absolutely,
a huge
yeah,
traumatic bombshell.
Yeah. And so I got that manila envelope, and, you know, of course I just, you know, I'm total dehydrating from the crying that I'm doing as I'm reading all these notes and cards and seeing the pictures and all this. And the last one, it was after I was 18. They were solid up until I was 18. And then there was a few that came after that. But the last one, it had her phone number on it and an address. And I was like, well, what the hell? Let's give it a shot. You know, and I called up, and come to find out that was really her. And so that was on a Thursday. And then that Saturday we were down in San Diego. We had drove all the way down 17 hours. And we left Friday morning, got down there Saturday night. Or I'm sorry, we left Friday, got down there Saturday morning. And she met us at the hotel that we were staying at. And she's just an itty bitty. She ain't no bigger than a fly fart. She's only about like 5'0". And, you know, I'm substantially larger than
sure. At least like a camel fart.
Yeah, right. Man, I'm like, at the time, I was a lot better shape than I am now, but I was 6'4", maybe 315, 325 pounds, something like that. And I was born 10 pounds, 4 ounces. And the very first words, I know I'm going to, this is not climactic at all, but the very first words out of my mouth to her was, I am so sorry, you know, wow, for being that big. And she knew what I was talking about.
Right.
But yeah, she just knew what I was talking about, you know. I don't recall the first words or the first sentence or the first subject, but I think it was something along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing, but I think it was something along the lines of, hey, Vicky, yes, I think you might be my mom, you know, and
wow,
and she is just the nicest, most soft-spoken, you know, now I've known these people for 23 years now. Me and my mom, we can finish each other's sentences. Never in my life. Well, you got to understand, at that time, this was 1997. And at this time, the first two people I ever met that I was related to by blood was my own kids. And I had to make them. So, you know, every time I went to a family reunion, that was like, in fact, probably one of the most horrible nightmares I ever had. Not literally nightmares like at night, but like a horrible thing going through my head was that one day I was gonna find the perfect woman. I was gonna fall in love. We were gonna get married, have kids, blah blah blah. Oh, hey, guess what? This is your sister, and now all your kids have three eyes. You know?
Wow. Well, that's a real concern, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a real concern. Sure.
And so the only time that I knew it was safe was at a family reunion, you know, and how redneck is that? Then I'm going to go out with my cousins.
Right. Go to the family group. Better put some cologne on.
You know how them good looking cousins
are. Here we go.
Well, you slather them with some barbecue sauce, girl. I'm ready for it. But what's even weirder than that, gosh, I can't believe I'm talking about this. What's even weirder than that is my dad is a total guy's guy. And by that, I mean that he loves sports. He loves, he builds stuff. He knows how to work on motors. You know, I don't like hunting. I don't like sports. I don't like... My girlfriend is into football. I have absolutely no. She laughs at me because I say, "Hey, when is your World Series thing happening? Whatever that is, you know." And I get made fun of because, "Oh, you're a guy this big and you don't like sports." But I'm just the complete opposite end of the spectrum of him. In fact, it's to the point I'm almost like. Really? Are you sure that that's my father? I mean, are we positive? Did
was a blood test? Are there any other tests? Right. Well, yeah. I got to tell you and I are in the same boat in that I am not interested in sports. I am not interested in auto repair. I'm not interested in I maintain no interest in any of those things. And I think there's no shame in it. There are plenty of other guys who are into it. Let them have it. I have no interest.
That is exactly the way to think. Well, what I was getting to was this. That at the time, whenever I met them, my dad was married to a very nice lady. Her name is Kathy. And I had two half-sisters through them. And I just loved them to pieces. In fact, we all went on a cruise a couple years ago, the whole gang. And so I just loved them to pieces. Well, Kathy had passed away a couple years ago from cancer. And so now, for the first time in my life, my mom and my dad are actually together, and that's weird.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of cool. They all live, all of them, everybody I just told you about, they all live out in Southern California. So it's not like they're right down the street from me, you know. But you know, we talk and we text and, you know, the email thing and all that, so... But
yeah, how are they doing right now in the midst of everything going on? Last I heard, Southern California was sort of the epicenter of the pandemic right now.
Well, my dad's the type that's always on the go. And, you know, he does something that's called over the line softball. And by telling you that, I just told you everything I know about it. He does all kinds of sports, including that. And God only knows what else. My mom, though. Me and her are like natural introverts. So we both kind of feel like we've been training for this our whole life, you know? So, staying in great. Hey, you know, this is awesome, you know? And, we're both inside type people, you know, neither one of us like the weather or doing anything in it or anything like that. So they're doing okay. My sisters are doing okay. Nieces and nephews and all them, everybody's doing good, but they're listening. The only one out of that whole group that doesn't listen is my father. And, so he's, you know, he's one of the, oh, it's not that bad. It's just a flu. I don't believe that 300 and some odd thousand people died, you know, and, everybody else is like, okay, shut up and stay in the house.
Right.
Think whatever you want to think.
Yeah, that's the lesson. That's sometimes that's all you can do. You're listening to Stranger Than Christian with me, Christian Carrion, on Radio Free Brooklyn. For more information, to hear dozens more episodes on demand, or to contact me, visit strangerthanchristian.com. My episodes are also available on major podcast outlets like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, TuneIn, and Amazon Music. You can also find me on Facebook at Stranger Than Christian and on Twitter at Stranger Than C. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, then I kindly ask that you consider supporting me on Patreon. That can be found at patreon.com/strangerthanchristian. To what end did you work in the music industry?
You know, that's a very broad very broad question. You know, there's well, I've provided transportation and security, so that's kind of a broad answer. But I've done everything from drive people in my car, the people that I'm working for. I've done everything from drive them in my car to driving tour buses, driving them in a limo. I work for a limousine company here in Virginia Beach. In fact, the owner's a very good friend of mine. Been working for her since 2004. And the stint that I did in Nashville, it was kind of like, it started, hey, Randy, can you do me a favor? Like I have a couple of friends that are kind of like on the outer fringe of country music in Nashville. And by outer fringe, I mean they have absolutely zero talent, you know, like they're producers or, well, I got one friend that's got talent, but they're producers or their security or management or something like that. Hey, Randy, can you do me a favor? And it all started, I just remembered now, it all started, there was one singer out of Nashville that his driver had, people found his driver doing things that he shouldn't be doing as a driver. You know, whenever you're in a position like that, there's things that you just don't do. And one of them is you don't call TMZ and tell them everything you know. And well, come to find out this guy was drinking and he's calling up TMZ all the time. And, you know, given what he considers quote unquote insider secrets, even though the guy that he's working for hasn't had a number one hit since the 80s. So I think that, somebody found out about it and they let him go. So then they call me, I fly out to where they're at and I drove that person for 9 days until they found a permanent, driver. And, then I fly back and I go back to what I figured my job was going to be. And then later on, like, oh, man, our driver took a shit on us. Hey, Randy, can you do me a favor? You know, and then you drive for like a week or 2 weeks or whatever, fill in the blank. And, you know, it just kind of turned out that there for about a year, maybe 2 years, I was like the replacement driver for tour buses, you know, for like one of them, the tour bus driver died. The Oak Ridge Boys, one of their tour bus drivers, he passed away. A couple other guys that, you know, they kind of, we call it juggling drivers, you know, they have like probably four people that they go to or half a dozen people. And they'll go on a list of priorities like this guy, like Steve's number one, but if he can't do it, then we're going to go to Larry. If Larry can't do it, we're going to go to Philip, you know? And so, you know, I'd be on the bottom end of a lot of lists, but, and then if you're a driver, then you meet other drivers. So that means that you meet the artists that they're driving for and the management that they're working for. And it just kind of, it's kind of like the mob without crime, you know, it's just, that's how you just a network, you know?
Right, right, right.
And, I naturally come from a security background. So, here, I haven't really provided a lot of security in Nashville at that time, but out here, I provide transportation and security. So I'll do the limo. And a couple of years ago, we had something called Something in the Water. It's Pharrell Williams is from Virginia Beach. He's probably one of our biggest names that ever came out of here. And he started a music festival called Something in the Water. And,
well, I'm familiar with it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Love Pharrell. Sure.
So the very first year, well, the only year that it went off was 2 years ago because they had to cancel it this year because of the COVID.
Right.
But it was supposed to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Well, Friday, it rained like hell, and I was driving Migos. We had three vehicles that were driving Migos, which at the time, I didn't know who they were. All I knew was Migos, because I'm old, and I don't know new rap guys. All I know is old rap guys, because that's what I listen to.
Right.
So whenever I seen them, you know, I meet their security guy, and their security guy made me look like I was anorexic, you know, because he's huge.
Sure.
Like 6'1", something like that. But the guy's arms looks like, you know, my thighs, you know, and nothing shakes when he walks, you know.
Right, right.
So, they got rained out that night, so we drove them all the way down to the oceanfront and waited for it, and then they called it, and they said, well, we can't do anything tonight, so then we took them back to the airport. So, you know, I was security on that. There's been other artists that came in and out of town. I live right next to an amphitheater in Virginia Beach, and we do a lot of business there, so most of the time it's just limousine, but sometimes I do security as well. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard the saying, you know, you should never meet your heroes. I can't say whether that's true or not true. I guess it depends on the hero. I actually met one of mine, which was Slick Rick.
Rick is one of your heroes.
Oh, yeah, man.
I love Slick Rick. Oh, we're going to talk about hip hop in a second, but please tell me about when you met Slick Rick.
Oh, man. This was quite a few years ago. It was out here. He was in a concert at the Hampton Coliseum, and they had a big, I wish I could remember the name of that thing, but they had a big, it was just like a jam. You know, back in the day, whenever I was a kid, they didn't have, well, they had concerts, but like if you go to Lynyrd Skynyrd, that's a concert. If you go to, you know, whatever, fill in the blank, that's a concert. But back in the like 80s, if you were, like, we called it house music at the time, but that was really like the beginning of rap and hip hop. And they did a show, and you had guys that were MCs, and Slick Rick was an MC. And those guys, they kind of like hype men, but they got talent, you know?
Right.
And so I was like one of four white guys in Southern Indiana that was listening to rap, and you couldn't buy that stuff in the stores. You had to get it somehow from like Chicago or New York City, probably New York City. I got mine from New York City, but there was like maybe three or four people between me and the person that recorded it. And you get the, you know, on these little shitty cassettes, you know?
Right.
And there were certain names like Kool Herc and Melly Mel and the Furious Five and, you know, things like that, I've heard of those names back then, but, you know, I heard 1,000 names, you know, those are the ones that just happened to stick through the years, you know, but Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick, I said that before I die, I will meet Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick. And now I'm actually friends with his DJ, and his DJ lives in Louisville, Kentucky, and which was an absolute shock to me. I can't believe there's a DJ for Slick Rick that lives in Louisville, Kentucky, but, come to find out, Nappy Roots, they live in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky. There's quite a few R&B, rap, hip-hop artists that live in that area. And, I mean, I lived in Louisville for a couple of years. That place is so white, it scares me. So I can't believe that they have, you know, that much hip-hop legends that are there, you know?
Right. Well, I remember around the time I graduated high school, so this is like 05, 06, Southern hip-hop really had a moment where it's almost like the entire movement was based in Atlanta, in places like Kentucky and Tennessee, and going even further in Houston. Southern hip hop was the thing for a long time. So I'm amazed, but not so amazed. I know that that it has roots there too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a funny thing that happened to me was, I can't remember the year. It's quite a few years ago, but they have a festival in one of the cities out here. And I think it's called AFRAM, African Music Festival, African American Music Festival. But I think that's what the long name of it is. But everybody out here calls it AFRAM. And they usually have amphitheater in Portsmouth, and that's where they used to do it. I don't know if they do it anymore now, but at the very first one I drove, that we had three chauffeurs and I was the only white dude there, and that night I met a lot of people that, you know, I heard names before and, you know, I've heard the music, but there really wasn't any old school guys there. They were all new, but one of them was Slim Thug. And that brother looks like a totem pole. I mean, he is so tall.
Wow.
I'm going to say that he's 6'10", something like that.
Is he that tall? That's incredible.
Oh, yeah. And
wow, I didn't know that.
Just absolutely one of the nicest guys. I mean, you know, I wouldn't borrow money from him, but he's absolutely one of the nicest guys that you could possibly ask for. My niece actually listens to him, and I had a poster, and I had bought a poster, and I asked him if he could sign it, and I gave it to her, and I think she has it to this day. She has it on her wall to this day. She's probably like mid-20s now. But all those guys, well, a vast majority of those guys were really, really nice. Ying Yang Twins, Slim Thugs, Trey Song. Trey Song's from here. Well, I think he's from Richmond, actually. Chris Brown before he was beating women. There was some other. Oh, Webby before he got arrested. At the time, these were the big names. You know, it was
sure, sure. Oh, they're still big names to me now. Absolutely.
Yeah. But,
well, I will tell you about three what I consider to be old school hip hop stars that I've met in my life. So the first one, I went to Southern Connecticut State University. And before I became a matriculated student, I used to go to the events on campus because it was right down the street from where I lived. So mm-hmm. one of the events I went to was a lecture on the history of hip hop. So it was the master of ceremonies was KRS-One.
Shut up.
So I got to sit in an auditorium for 2 hours and listen to KRS-One tell me about the history of hip-hop. And I met him afterwards, and he was phenomenal. He's another really big guy. His hand was like the size of my face. It was unbelievable. Right. So that's one. Two, I met Rakim once. Rakim did a show with Ghostface from Wu-Tang at Toad's Place back in 2008, 2009, and he stayed after the show and met a lot of people in the audience, and he was very soft-spoken, very humble guy.
Wow.
And then the most recent old-school hip-hop star I've met, in 2012, I was a contestant on a game show called Hollywood Squares, and MTV was doing their own version. And it didn't last very long, but I was one of the contestants.
Oh, wow.
And in the center square for my episode was one of my heroes, and that is Biz Markie.
Oh, my God.
I almost cried seeing him because you don't like when you do a show like that, they don't really tell you who's on the show until you get there. Wow. So to all of a sudden have this drop to me that I'm gonna see Biz Markie. Little did I know, after the show, he invited me up to his square and we like sat and talked for a few minutes. He is like 7 feet tall. We're surrounded by all the lights from the show in the middle of the board of I told him I feel like I'm in an acid trip right now. Unbelievable. But that's, yeah, those are the three big old school stars that I've met.
Those are kind of big names, brother. I ain't gonna lie, man. That's kind of big deal.
You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, independent, listener-supported radio. Radio Free Brooklyn's mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. Every dollar helps us stay on the air. Support independent community media by pledging whatever you can. All contributions are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Please support with a monthly pledge or one-time donation at radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. If you'd like to listen to RFB when you're not in front of your computer, please consider downloading our free mobile app for iPhone and Android, available in the App Store for iPhone or the Google Play Store for Android. And please be sure to subscribe to our monthly newsletter for the latest news about new programming and upcoming RFB events. You can sign up at radiofreebrooklyn.org/newsletter.
Because of the experiences that I had and the few people that I've been lucky enough to meet, I kind of took those experiences and I started a nonprofit to help out high school music departments. And that was when I have two girls, and both of my girls were in high school at the same time. And I saw with my own eyes how, for lack of a better term, shitty their funding was for the arts, anything arts, you know, whether it be drawing or sculpting or any kind of music. It doesn't matter. The funding for it was just horrible. And, you know, it seems kind of cliche to every year they're doing bake sales and selling cookie dough and selling popcorn tins and stuff like that. It's just they were doing that whenever I was in high school back in the early 80s, you know, and they're still doing that crap now. So I kind of came up with my own little thing and my own program. And we had a pilot project. I guess it was 5 or 6 years ago. We had a pilot project in Evansville, Indiana, and I was lucky enough to get on board with Vandenberg County School System. And for legal reasons that had nothing to do with us, the entire arts department for all of the schools in that county had to almost shut down for that year. So that blew us out. And then I was like, gosh, well. And I always told myself, if I don't get this done by the time, if I don't have a pilot project by the time I'm 50, I'm not going to start it. I'm just going to go back to work, get a regular jobby job and pay bills like normal folks. But I had friends and family and a really awesome, awesome woman in my life that told me to, you know, stop thinking negative stuff and just keep the ball going. So then last year, I was fortunate enough to meet somebody that runs a nonprofit organization in Hampton, Virginia, which is, it's on the other side of the water, but probably about an hour from here, something like that. It's one of the seven cities in Hampton Roads. And she put me in touch with high schools in two different school districts. And so we had a pilot project for one of the high schools in one of the districts. And then COVID happened.
Of course.
Like, holy hell, you know? So
right.
I really got strong vibes coming for next year, because, you know, it seems like every time that it gets worse and worse. And I'm thinking there's nothing that's going to beat COVID, but, you know, time will tell.
Well, I want to know the name of your nonprofit, and I want to know where people can donate. Is there a website? Is there a way that people outside of your circle that maybe aren't
that's
local
awesome.
To you can help? Yeah, well, please.
The cool thing about it, well, it's called the SMARTS Project. It's common spelling. There's no cool, you know, the Z is silent or anything like that. It's just the SMARTS Project. In fact, my big fat ass, I have a smart car, and it kind of gets a lot of attention whenever you see 360 pounds of anything getting out of a smart car. So, you know, I have my logo on the back. That gets a little attention. But it's at thesmartsproject.org. And the great thing about this is that we don't take donations. We're a nonprofit, and, you know, I legally can take donations. That's great. It's not like I'll turn it down. But the whole program is started from a grant, and like right now we've been written into seven grants. And so, but what we do is, It's really neat. Now it's old hat, because I do something about it every day. But we go into a high school, and just going on the assumption that we have the official okie dokie from whoever gives the official okie dokie, we let the kids get together, and we treat them like if they're like the Backstreet Boys or whatever, you know, like they're a band, they're a group. So we're gonna treat them like that. So they're gonna have their own album. They're going to record their own album. They're going to sell that album for the fundraising money for that. They make their own money for their own arts department, for their own music department. And then later on, the second part of it, they actually open up for a real artist in a real amphitheater or a stage or concert venue or whatever, not in the school. I mean, they can if they want, but like in a real concert venue, they get to open for somebody. So they get to see every aspect of music. And, you know, to some people that might sound, hopefully it sounds like a good idea to everybody, but that's not even touching. That's not even the tip of the iceberg there. Because if you think about everything that goes into recording an album, you have cover art, you have marketing, you have public relations, you have, you know, all those things in there. Well, a vast majority of those things, they have classes for that in the school. So business classes, why don't you come up with a marketing plan? Find a way that you feel that would be the most effective way to market this album for your school. The cover art, the art class, the physical art class, like drawing, they would come up with, or they would elect somebody to come up with the cover art. So if you're an artist and you draw, how could you not want your stuff on the cover of an album? You know,
absolutely.
All of this stuff, a vast majority of this stuff is taken care of in-house in the high school. And these are real life lessons that are being taught to these kids, and they get to see the results in real time. And this is something that they can do every year. It's you know, whether I'm there or not, they can do it every year. I just happen to know a couple of celebrities that, you know, they can open for. I know some people at a couple of labels that, you know, they can produce and make the albums and whatnot. But
sure, using your resources.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. A lot of people for the pilot project that we had last year, a lot of people were excited about it. And then the COVID hit, and I'm just like, are you kidding me with this? Like, darn, you know?
Of course, it derailed everything.
Yeah, but now I'm hearing, it's not like I'm really in the loop of a lot of nonprofit stuff, but I try to do as much research as I can. But I've seen kind of a push towards a rethinking of the education system. The gentleman that just got appointed to be in charge of education for the upcoming administration, he's a former teacher.
Yeah. So, oh, he's from my home state. He's from Connecticut.
Oh, is that right?
He sure is.
But this guy was a teacher, so he knows a vast majority of the problems that real teachers have. You know, it's not some schmuck that, you know, that's a millionaire and, you know, hasn't been to school since, you know, the Ivy League school that they went to, you know, 60 years ago or whatever. But this is a real dude from real school, and he knows, you know, the real problems that real teachers have. So I've seen kind of a push on the East Coast. It might be on the West Coast, too, but I've read on the East Coast that they're wanting to redo the education system to a certain extent, which is including arts, because you always hear of the STEM classes, but I see kind of a small push towards STEAM, and that's adding the arts into it.
Right.
So that, all of that, the program, that's only a part of it, but the everything that I've told you, that's something that they could do every year. That's something that they could use that money for whatever they want. And a good example is one year I was working a contract job in the western part of the state of Virginia. And there was in that part of the state, it's really a lot of hills. Like the only flat piece of real estate out there is a Walmart parking lot. And even that, you know, just kind of hilly. But they had a really bad rain out there one time. And there was a teacher that he had a house, and it was built on the side of a hill. And he just got married, just moved in there, brand new family. I think he had a daughter, a baby girl, I think it was. And he went to school. I forgot what he taught, but he was one of the teachers in the school. And he got a phone call from the chief of police in that town telling him that the entire side of that hill had washed out. The house is gone. That side of the house is gone. Of course, his wife and his daughter, as far as I know, they haven't found them yet. And this was a handful of years ago. So the school there, this is before I had smarts, but the school there, I helped them do a fundraiser so they can raise money for him to get a place to stay, to, because he lost everything, including his family. So something like that, you know, there's always somebody that needs help. So if you're going to take that money, you're going to earn it, you're going to put it towards your arts classes, hey, that's great. But if you want to use that for an emergency to help somebody out or help a company or something like that, then, you know, that's your money. You can do whatever you want with it, you know. So I think it really empowers the students and the teachers at the school that they don't have to depend so much on state and federal funding, because whenever you do that, there's certain hoops that you have to jump through. I'm not making anybody jump through hoops. All I'm saying is you do this, you get this money, you could do whatever you want with it, but you know, this is your money. So, you know, it gives them a lot of independence and I really think it's a great program, and any high school can use it. And the best part about it is that this program is only for music. That it does. I have that same framework for, say, like dancing and acting and robotics and culinary. You know, that same framework can be used on all.
Right, it's applicable to any sort of branch of the arts. Absolutely.
Yeah.
God, so valuable. My father was a teacher for about 25 years, and 15 of those years he was an art teacher, and that was when I was growing up. So I was young, 5, 6, 7, 8, and I remember going with him to pick out all of the materials for his classes at the beginning of every school year. Mm-hmm. So I know firsthand, you know, this is back in the mid-90s, so I know firsthand that the budget for art classes was not prioritized compared to things like sports and things like academics, yeah. You know. So I can only imagine that that's not the case now. And thank God for programs like yours that are helping to bridge that gap. That I think it's so noble and so valuable. And I'm so proud to hear all that. Absolutely. You know, I usually say at the end something like, you know, I hope this was as much fun to do as it was to listen to. I'm going to go ahead and say this was just as much fun as I knew it was going to be from reading your application and knowing that I was going to talk to you today. I had so much fun talking to you. I'm so glad we're not strangers anymore.
Well, thanks,
this was just
man.
Such a fun conversation.
You're a blast. And, you know, we should do this again sometime.
I would love to, Randy. Absolutely. Listen, tell all your family in Southern California to stay safe, all the family near you to stay safe, you as well, and hopefully I'll be talking to you soon.
All right, I shall. Have a great one. Stay safe.
Hey, you as well. Thank you, Randy. Bye-bye. Stranger Than Christian is produced by me, Christian Carrion, from my studio in beautiful Lancaster City, Pennsylvania. Visit strangerthanchristian.com for more information, to contact me, or to hear dozens of additional episodes on demand. Also, find the show on your favorite major podcast platform, on Facebook at Stranger Than Christian, and on Twitter at Stranger Than C. If you enjoyed the show, I kindly ask that you support me on Patreon. To do that, go to patreon.com/strangerthanchristian. Until next week, my name is Christian Carrion. Thank you so much for tuning in to Stranger Than Christian on Radio Free Brooklyn. Good night. If you live in New York City and run for either fun or exercise, here's a way to learn something about the city while you're getting in your workout. City Running Tours is now offering neighborhood running tours designed with locals in mind. New York City takes pride in the diversity and character of its neighborhoods, and these unique running tours offer an opportunity to learn the history of a neighborhood and get personal recommendations from your guide. Choose from tours of 23 neighborhoods, including the East Village, the Upper West Side, Bushwick, Long Island City, and Roosevelt Island. For more information about the running tours and to see the list of neighborhoods and full tour schedule, check out their website at www.cityrunningtours.com/New York City. Also, check out a live tour every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Instagram.com/cityrunningtours.
Let's teach people something super quick.
Every year, more people die from getting hit on the head with coconuts than they do from shark attacks.
Like dead?
It's not that many, because like only like one or two people I think die from shark attacks every year. The low teens for the coconuts.
Coconuts are hard.
Teach me something good.
Now on your local favorite podcast thing.
Yeah, all podcast things.
Hey kids, it's the Honey Leave It Show. We just want to say thank you. We just passed the 3,000 download mark, which is a big deal for a new podcast, and so we're just really, really grateful. If you've never heard of the Honey Leave It Show, it's a comedy podcast about sex. So if you like laughing and you like sex, you should come and listen to the show. If you don't like to laugh and you don't like to have sex, please don't bother. You won't enjoy it at all. The Honey Leave It Show has new episodes every Friday on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and Apple, of course. Looking forward to seeing y'all there. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Apocalypse Podcast Network. For more great podcasts, go to apocalypsepodcastnetwork.com.